Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while GEICO could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, GEICO has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
It hasn't been raining in the last couple of months, but it's time for the change in the season. Here come up these clouds.
All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast. Welcome back from Christmas break, if you have Christmas break. Tommy, how was your Christmas?
Christmas was good, relaxing. Didn't have to work, which was nice, and got to watch four good basketball games.
For sure. Somehow it's a lot colder than it was since last we spoke. I don't know how, but it's pretty frigid in California. You and I are both wearing sweaters, actually.
Yeah.
So for Christmas, I had a pretty good Christmas, too. It was just the normal, typical family stuff. Spent time with my family, spent time with my girlfriend's family. In the middle of all that is... I had my fantasy football like playoffs going on. I was in the semifinals, right?
Nice.
And so on, I think it was literally Christmas morning, like this weird like stat correction quirk came out in the NFL. And usually the NFL like corrects everything before Thursday, before like the next week starts, right? And so like to quickly summarize like my entire playoff run, like, I won the first round and I was in the semifinals, but I lost my semifinals 128.13 to 128.79. So I lost by pretty much less than a point, right?
Yeah.
My running backs that week were like Tim Hightower and Denard Robinson.
Amazing.
So I wake up Christmas morning and ESPN puts out, or like there's an article from like ESPN and the NFL that says like, Denard Robinson stat correction swings playoff championships. This stat correction for Denard Robinson where he got 1.3 points added on to his like stats. He originally wasn't supposed to have 13 yards taken away from him in the first place, but I guess they only made the stat correction like on Christmas morning. So, you know, they did the stat correction, and then I looked at my thing. I was like, wait, 1.3 plus blah, 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 blah. Oh my gosh, I should be in the finals. You know, I should be in the championship because ESPN, I guess if you play on ESPN leagues, like they actually, even though on Thursday night the Chargers played and the next week had already started, they still changed the brackets anyways. So they, if you play Denard Robinson and his point total actually affected your outcome and you didn't end up being in the championship, they bumped you into the championship essentially. So, you know, I woke up to that news and I was like, oh my God, I think I'm in the championship. Unfortunately, I play on Yahoo for my fantasy stuff and Yahoo did not award that point stat correction to my player Denard Robinson. And I ended up still playing for third place and actually not even winning my third place game. So I walked away with like no money whatsoever.
Damn.
So it ended up being like a not so Christmas miracle because Yahoo Fantasy sucks. So yeah, don't play on Yahoo Fantasy for fantasy football. With that said, let's get to actual like basketball stuff and Lakers stuff. What do you know? Like I thought it was going to happen again, but thank God the Lakers didn't win this time. So the streak is broken. You know, this podcast, we haven't had any Lakers wins in the last three games. In fact, it's been the exact opposite. It's been like abomination after abomination.
Yeah, seriously.
With the Lakers like getting demolished by OKC and then the Clippers and then the Hornets the other night. Before we get to that, I just wanted to run through some quick NBA news and get your thoughts on it. So I think we learned today that Eric Bledsoe is out for the Phoenix Suns.
Yep.
I just wanted to point on that, not just because Eric Bledsoe is out for the entire season, but just to show you how quickly things can change in the NBA for a particular team. Because looking at the Phoenix Suns, I mean, this team last year was like the, you know, the poster child for like, oh, this is how you should rebuild, man. This up and coming team, all of a sudden, you know, they made the right moves. They got the right coach and they're just up and coming. You know, they signed Tyson Chandler to try and recruit Kevin Durant. They didn't get him, or like not Kevin Durant, LaMarcus Aldridge. They didn't get him, but that's okay. They're going in the right direction. And then all of a sudden, this team is in shambles pretty much. They have Markieff Morris, who's, you know, doing stupid stuff left and right. You know, his coach hates him. He hates the coach. Like, he's a problem child. And then you have the Goran Dragic thing from last year where, you know, he didn't trust the organization and they eventually had to trade him for, you know, I mean, Brandon Knight was a good get, but they also traded the Lakers pick for that. And then on top of that, they signed Tyson Chandler to like a 4-year, $15 million a year contract, and which is ridiculous, like in hindsight. And now they have him on for 3 more years. So the Suns right now, I mean, I feel like they're just like all of a sudden out of nowhere stuck in no man's land, where they used to be like the up and coming team with like all the great young talent. But now, especially with this Bledsoe injury, which I think you said this was like 3 out of the last 4 years that he's been out with a significant injury of some sort. And now, yeah, they're just stuck here. And the Suns, I don't know where they go from here, because it seems like there's a lot of turmoil now. It almost seems like they're worse off than the Sixers and the Lakers. What are your thoughts on the Suns?
Yeah, so the loss to Bledsoe, that's obviously huge, right? He was having a career year. I don't know if it was 3 of the last 4 years, but it was something like in his first 6 years, he's, including this year, he's gonna have missed like a significant amount of time in 3 out of 6 seasons, which is pretty crazy for a guy who's 26 years old. It sucks because, you know, it's like he's come back from other, he's had other, like his other injuries have been like related to his knees also, right? Because yeah, this one's a meniscus. So allegedly the kind of procedure that he got is going to be better for him long term, but that's why it takes longer to recover from it. That's what I saw some tweets about that today. I'm not like a doctor, obviously, so I have no idea, yeah. But you still have to wonder, like, although he's had gone through 2 long injuries already, you have to wonder that how much more of a beating can this guy's body take, like, surgery-wise? And for the way he plays like Russell Westbrook, you know what I mean? He's charging into the lane, jumping and going crazy. So you have this guy on a max deal. So I guess to get back to your point originally about like where the Suns are going, you have this guy on a max deal. You have Brandon Knight on a huge deal. You have Tyson Chandler, like you said, on a huge deal, who's only playing 22 minutes per game for you. Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head when you said things change a lot in this league, like very fast. And you know, it's sort of like a basketball karma thing at some level. You know, like Markieff Morris was a really nice player for you, and him and his brother, like, it was very public knowledge that they sort of took discounts to stay with that team because they wanted to be together. Yeah. And then you just go up and trade his brother like the following year. Like, that's so messed up. Like, not only is that going to hurt you from like a basketball karma standpoint, which clearly it has, but it's also going to hurt you from like a long-term
PR.
Yeah, PR. Like, players know that this happened. Players are friends. They talk to each other. Like, good luck signing a big free agent who thinks that you're not going to be loyal after, you know, this whole ordeal. So I don't really know what's going to happen to them. It's like you mentioned, they were like ahead of the curve of with this whole let's acquire a bunch of picks and all that. And they were the ones who, you know, before people thought Steve Nash was really, really done, they traded him for 2 future firsts.
Yeah.
And then they, which ended up being a good trade until they traded that, you know, one of those.
Yeah.
Which like potentially could be the number 4 pick overall this year for Brandon Knight. But anyway. So they trade Steve Nash for 2 firsts. They unloaded a ton of guys for first round picks. And what did they make of it? I mean, like, look, they had a tank year where they ended up getting Alex Len, who's like, given the quality of centers in the NBA, he's decent.
Yeah.
But he's just not like, I don't know. They took him like in the lottery and he's just been whatever.
They pretty much have him and Devin Booker and then, you know, that's pretty much it.
TJ Warren's not bad, but he's old.
Yeah.
And he's right, like pretty much exclusively a scorer, and he was pretty much exclusively a scorer in college. So it remains to be seen, like, can he do anything else? I'm not exactly sure, but Devin Booker, I really, really, really like.
He looks good.
He looks good. The guy can shoot just like lights out. I mean, we were talking in the preseason, just on a slight tangent, we were talking in the preseason, it was probably before this podcast even, about how it's so risky to take guys like Devin Booker, like 6'6 shooting guards who are seemingly really good shooters, but they don't really do anything else.
Do anything else.
But when you hit on a guy like Booker, who's just like a Klay Thompson seemingly like level shooter, it doesn't matter really. I mean, he can develop some semblance of maybe he'll get you 2 assists per game at some point in his career.
Yeah.
But if he can shoot this accurate, I mean, he's not going to shoot 57% from three for his career, which is what he's shooting right now. But if he can shoot over 40% from three consistently, especially as a rookie, that guy is going to be dangerous.
Yeah.
So I like that. I like that player for them. But yeah, it's just the Suns. It's so sad how things change. And it really shows you why Mitch, over the past couple of years has been saying, you know, you can't just rely on taking rookies because who knows what's going to happen. And the Suns were sort of like building young guys. And then they signed Bledsoe and suddenly it seemed like, oh my God, things are going to go amazingly. But then boom, they make a horrible trade and get rid of Dragic. And then boom, they make a couple other ill-advised moves. And now they're suddenly back, you know, near the bottom of the West, and they probably will finish around the bottom now that Bledsoe's out. So,
yeah, it's the curse of the Wonder Twins. You can't trade away Twins, man. And it's funny that they did that trade, and that's not, there wasn't too much separation in time between that trade and when they traded Dragic, who was pretty much saying the same thing, where he was like, you know, I trusted this organization and they told me certain things about my role and they never lived up to it. You know, he had communication issues with the front office as well. And then for that, you know, just a few months later for them to like trade the Wonder Twins, who I guess had like this under the table kind of deal that, you know, me and my brother stick together forever, you know, It just lends itself to more questions about the front office and their organization and how they're communicating or like not communicating with their players. And, you know, unfortunately for them, you know, I mean, on the flip side, like you said, I think this Bledsoe injury may progress the development of Devin Booker because he'll get a chance to, I guess, start at shooting guard and play. But on the other end, he's like kind of being brought up in this tumultuous situation where he is not even sure if his coach is going to be his coach for that much longer. They're thinking about firing Hornacek. They already fired some of their assistant coaches. And this was like a summer after everybody was praising them for doing such a good job leading up to the LaMarcus Aldridge thing, where they were so close. You know, they were number two in his LaMarcus Aldridge's, you know, list of guys. And, yep, you know, they were so smart to sign Tyson. I remember I was one of the guys like, man, we should have signed Tyson Chandler. They knew what they were doing because they knew LaMarcus wanted Tyson, and they had Tyson Chandler right next to them, sitting right next to them. They're so smart. And then I look back at it and I'm like, wait a minute, that guy's like 34 years old and they signed him to like 4-year deal, like $15 million a year. Wow, thank God we didn't do that, you know? So it just shows you, like, even in, you know, even though hindsight's 2020, that if you move too fast in this league without like an actual set plan or without sticking to your guns, like things could fall apart like so quickly. So
right. And I just go ahead. Were you going to say something?
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say the only thing that sort of interested me about the Suns collapse, I guess, is the finger's going to start to get pointed like in every which way. Right. So
right. Because
of the way the NBA works, you just sort of get this weird feeling that I know there were like rumors about like, what are they going to do with Jeff Hornacek, even though like this guy won them 48 games 2 years ago and won them like, you know, I think 40 games last year.
Yeah.
I think Jeff Hornacek is actually a really good coach considering the roster. If you look at that roster on paper, it is not good. Like Brandon Knight is like your best player, or I guess Bledsoe was, but your two best players are not like anywhere near all-star level, I'd say. Bledsoe, you could maybe make an argument statistically, but there's so many guards in this league who can do what he does. Maybe not with like that athleticism and crazy play that he, but like how many, there's like a million good point guards in the NBA. So, but eventually you figure that the finger is going to get pointed at Hornacek. And if he gets fired because this team seems like they're, you know, it feels frantic. I mean, I'm not there. I'm not a Suns fan, but it feels so crazy. And if he gets fired, the Lakers are seriously going to have to look, in my opinion, going to have to look at this guy. I mean, there were talks that if they fired him, they were going to chase Luke Walton, which they still might do. And if we're not, I don't know. I mean, then you get into this whole thing of like, okay, well then should we go after Luke Walton? This is going to go on a whole tangent, but I'm just saying that if Hornacek becomes available, that would be a really seemingly nice balanced coach for the Lakers to pursue.
Yeah, I'm on board with that as well. I didn't think we'd talk about the Suns that much, actually. I didn't even plan this, but there's the Suns. And it's a good thing to look at in terms of like looking at the future and trying to avoid certain miscues and missteps on how you're, you know, rebuilding. So I guess the last thing I wanted to quickly touch on was the Sixers signing Ish Smith and the trust the process. I don't even know if that's what they do, but I'm just assuming they do because they're cult followers like that.
Right.
But it's getting less and less like a trust the process kind of thing, even though they did, you know, sign Ish Smith last year. But D'Antoni is actually fully on board as the assistant coach now. And in their last two games since they made the move to trade for Ish Smith and, I guess, release Tony Roten, the Sixers have won their – They beat the Suns. I guess that shows you just how much of a collapsed organization you are when you lose to the Sixers, right?
That's right.
So the Sixers beat the Suns in Phoenix, actually, and then they almost beat Utah in Utah as well. So I mean, it just goes to show you in this league what you can do with an actual point guard. You know, an actual point guard who can run the show, and you know, guys like Nerlens Noel, they need a pick and roll partner. You know, Kendall Marshall is gonna pass a lot, but he's so slow it doesn't even matter because defenses aren't geared to him, you know. Where Ish Smith is, you know, he was killing it in New Orleans like this at the beginning of the year in place of Jrue Holiday while he was still kind of getting up to speed. So not to say that the Sixers are going to improve so dramatically that, you know, we have a shot again at the number one, but hey, we might have a shot if they continue to improve because they continue to play in the East Coast and play the likes of the Brooklyn Nets and stuff like that. So I'm encouraged that, you know, they actually got a legit point guard. They now have one of the fastest point guards in the league, and then one of the slowest, or the slowest point guard backing him up in Kendall Marshall. So any thoughts on Ish Smith and D'Antoni and the hope that they might actually start looking like an NBA team here?
I mean, they'll probably look better. The following game after they beat Phoenix, they only lost to the Jazz by 4. The Jazz are like the 8th seed, I think, in the West right now. They're below 500, but they're not that bad, and they're very good defensively.
Nope. Yeah.
And Ish put up 22 points and 11 assists in that game, which is pretty crazy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so that's not a bad signing. It's just not – it makes sense. Like, they're doing things that make sense now. I'm not a blind 76ers hater. I just hated Sam Hinkie because he did a bunch of things that didn't make any sense. And it's like, okay, before D'Antoni and before, like, Colangelo was on board, you know, there's so many guys now with an influence in this fool's ear that, like, is it even really his process anymore or, like, what? But so he set them up. Like, I give him credit for, like – I don't even know how much credit, though, you can really give him for putting together teams so bad for the last 3 years that they ended up with, like, top picks in all of them. But he set them up with a lot of assets. And Ish Smith is a 27-year-old point guard. He's extremely fast, and he's perfect for Mike D'Antoni's system.
Yep.
Perfect signing. Would he have signed – would Sam Hinkie have signed Ish Smith before Mike D'Antoni? Probably not, you know, and before Colangelo? Probably not. So –
I mean, they did have him last year. It's just weird that they let him go.
Exactly. You know, they had him last year, but it's like it's like, again, the revolving door of assets. So they have him last year for 20 games or something, and they get rid of him. And he played really well. I'm looking at his stats right now. He in
it's like 12 points and 7 assists.
12 points and 6 assists in 27 minutes.
Yeah.
Not bad, you know what I mean? But just because he was, what, 26 years old last year, it's like, oh, he's, you know, he's washed up for the Sixers, I guess. So it's nice to see them, like, okay, we have some young guys, but it's cool if we have some veterans too, especially if those veterans are going to make the development of these young guys a lot easier. You know, you turn to the Lakers situation and you're like, oh my God, we have all this young talent who look like a bunch of chickens with their heads cut off because they have no one to like tell them what to do, i.e. they don't have a coach. You know what I mean? So it's sort of like a similar situation. Like, just because you're tanking doesn't mean you don't have to have a coach in our case. And the same thing for the Sixers. Just because you're tanking doesn't mean you have to have 19-year-old players at every position. So it's nice to see that they're starting to move in the right direction. And sadly, now we're sort of lagging behind. I mean, I still think we're going to finish with more wins than them somehow. But
But it could get dicey and close if they win one before we face off on the – I think we play them on the first, right?
We play them very soon, and it's going to be hilarious if we lose that game. But
the Sixers sweep the Lakers. That's awesome.
Yeah. So we'll see. But, yeah, no, I mean, good move by the Sixers.
Yeah, so we'll see where that goes. Yeah, let's just wrap it up there. With that talk, I guess one other thing that I wanted to get to before we get into some of the games, and just to preface everything, this podcast, we're going to actually talk about more about some NCAA prospects, because I don't know, I feel personally like I've hit the point of the season where the games just kind of mesh all into one,
they
and I'm just
mesh
like,
into like a horrible blob of crap.
I'm just like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to be watching anymore besides the typical stuff, you know, like, oh, did Jordan Clarkson play well? Did D'Angelo play well? Did Julius Randle play well? What's Byron doing that's screwing up the rotation? It's like all the same stuff.
Yeah.
What stupid crap is Pincus trying to say and then renege on? I don't know. It's like, the season's kind of hit that, like, it's like dog days of summer kind of thing, but in the season. So
exactly.
I think it's a good to have a little segue into some NCAA talk that we can look forward to and talk about more. But we'll get to that in a little bit after we talk some Lakers talk. But I guess one other thing that I wanted to talk about was, I guess because I'm on break and I have a little more time to do stuff, I actually was able to, have you been like following Backstage Lakers at all this year?
You know, I'm like 6 episodes behind on my DPR,
okay.
But they're all so saved on there, but I just need to watch them.
Right. So I actually had time to watch one of the most recent episodes. And actually, it was one of the episodes that covered the Lakers, like, Minneapolis trip where D'Angelo had that breakout game. And just a few pointers that I wanted to point out that I thought was really interesting was one of them was right after D'Angelo hit that or like missed that potential game-winning shot. I think everybody knows that video shot of Kobe putting his arms around D'Angelo and kind of talking to him. But in that Backstage Lakers episode, they actually had the audio on for that, or they actually picked up Kobe's audio. And I really like what I heard because everything, you know, Kobe just kept saying to D'Angelo, "Yo, man, that was a good look. That was a good look, man. That was a good look." And he was like saying it, smiling and everything, and just reassuring him. And you know, I know you. Like in our last podcast for Not On Your Nice List, you put Kobe on your nice list. And after seeing that interaction, you know, it was just really, really cool to see Kobe that genuinely into like supporting a guy and like genuinely into his development. Cause I think we've seen Kobe many times throughout the years and especially this season where he'll say one thing and then he'll do something else. You know, you're not really sure what to believe when Kobe says something or if he's just doing or saying things for PR reasons. But when you see something like, and he might still be doing that for this, but I, you know, when I saw that clip of him just telling D'Angelo, and I think the only place you can see this clip is on Backstage Lakers. So it wasn't like a media driven thing where people talked about, "Hey, did you know Kobe was telling D'Angelo that was a good look? That was a good look." So, I just thought it was like a really encouraging sign to see, you know, Kobe actively, telling D'Angelo, that was a good look. It was almost reminiscent of when Kobe, you know, took those 3 air balls in Utah, and then Shaq kind of did the same thing. You know, when, as they were walking off the floor, Shaq kind of had his arms around Kobe Bryant, young rookie Kobe Bryant, telling him, "Hey, man, it's all good. You'll learn from this," all that stuff. So, I mean, that's what Lakers' legacy is about, right?
Yep.
So, yeah. And then one other thing is, I don't know if you knew this, but it's funny to forget how good an organization the Lakers are when you see what's happening in the front office and the coaching and just see everything kind of like not make any sense. But I was kind of reminded that the Lakers just in general have like a good foundation in place because in the Minneapolis trip, they actually have these cool programs set up for the young guys, these developmental programs. Like they had this thing called like an intro to champions course where they actually had D'Angelo, Tariq Black, Jordan Clarkson and Julius Randle have a sit down dinner with Devin George, like while they were on the road for Devin George to just kind of relay his information to them, like how it was fighting with Kobe and like those championship days. And at first I didn't know it was Devin George. I was like, "Well, Corey Maggette got kind of fat." I was like, "Who is that? Why are they talking to Corey?" I was like, "Why are they talking to Corey Maggette?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, Devin George, that small that small forward that Phil Jackson kept starting for some odd reason."
Like,
why did they keep starting Devin George? He didn't do anything. But no, Devin George was a solid player for those championship runs, and he did what he was supposed to do as a role player. But, you know, just seeing that the Lakers have these programs in place for the young guys and they actually implement them, and it's just encouraging to see from a developmental standpoint. And, you know, having an organization that actually does that is, like, super, super crucial and important, you know. Any thoughts on that? Just, like, I guess you didn't know that about the organization, but, you know, it's sometimes easy to forget that the Lakers are an upstanding organization. So,
yeah, I mean, You're right. Given how things have gone the last 3 years and how we've been sort of like the laughingstock of the NBA for the last 3 years or so, it's – I mean, not the laughingstock, but, you know, when a team is historically amazing and then suddenly they're bad, it's really easy to gang up on them, right? You know what I mean? Like, at this point, people don't even really, like – I guess the Kings are a bad example because they're horribly managed. But, like, for example, Minnesota was bad for so long, even when they had Kevin Love. It's not like you saw it would turn on ESPN and they'd all be joking about how bad Minnesota is. You know what I mean? But the Lakers carry that prestige. So you forget because of all like the trash talking and how horrible things have gone the last few years. But yeah, you're right. That's, we talked about this and I think when before the podcast, again, I'm referencing all these pre-podcasts. So, when we were talking about our draft pick and I kept saying, whoever the Lakers take, I have faith at number two is probably going to end up being the best, if not the second best player. I mean, Karl-Anthony Towns seems amazing, side note. But the reason being, the Lakers have such a solid legacy. Like, they have this insane, you know, wealth of resources in terms of people. And, you know, Kobe's going to retire, but he's going to be around. And he's going to be in Southern California, and it's going to be a phone call, and Kobe Bryant will be in the gym working on post moves with your, you know, rookie guard or with your rookie forward, Ben Simmons. But he, you know, that's like the nice thing. You get all this, like, James Worthy is going to come in. You get all, and then like the things like this, Devin George was on the team for 7 years, and he won like 3 rings with us. So these resources are just, and that's a really good resource also as like a role player to be like, I was a role player on like a Phil Jackson team. Like, that's a pretty big deal. And like, this is what I did. These are my experiences. And it's just nice. Like, for example, you look at like Karl-Anthony Towns, fortunately for Minnesota, they have Kevin Garnett back. Imagine if Kevin Garnett wasn't there, though. Like, Kevin Garnett has not been on the team for several years before they got Towns. And, I mean, he was on the team last year, but several years before that, he wasn't on the team. And who does Minnesota bring in to talk to Karl-Anthony Towns about, like, what it means to be a Timberwolver, like, how to be, you know, dominant big man in the NBA? Like, it would be hard, you know? Not to say it's impossible. It just wouldn't be as easy. And that's the nice thing about the Lakers, and that's why I have, like, despite everything that's going on this year with Byron, just being around this environment and this history is going to be enough to motivate several, if not all, of these young guys to continue to get better. So although D'Angelo has been like a little bit inconsistent, which I mean, you could expect from a rookie, I think this sort of thing that you just referenced with the Devin George, those are the types of things that are going to help him and motivate him and push him to get better. And so, yeah, that's the nice part about being a Laker fan. There's always that history, although, you know, you can't hold on to it too much, which I think is what the front office has been doing lately, but we'll see.
Yes, yeah. But at least we know there are still signs of life here and signs of hope that we can cling on to for sure. With that said, we will talk about the last three Laker games now, and we'll try and keep it short because we want to talk about the NCAA and, like, what the Lakers' future holds. Ben Simmons, Brandon Ingram, there we go.
You know, I'm just did it and it's all.
All right, we are back and we're going to talk about the Lakers' last three games, and they were really painful to watch again. OKC with another 30-point drubbing, 30, 40 points, whatever, and then the Clippers game and then the Hornets game yesterday. I remember we recorded our last
Memphis
podcast.
Game.
Oh, the Memphis game. Oh, they're all melding into one.
Many blowout losses that I forget how many we've had at this point.
Oh, so maybe there was like four games. But yeah, you know, I remember we recorded during on the night of the OKC game, and I joke, you know, maybe we'll only lose by 20 points this time, and they ended up losing by like freaking 30. So, I mean, this is this team, you know. Okay, so how do we collect our thoughts here? Yeah. What did you think about this last stretch for the Lakers?
Yeah, I think that's a good way of doing it.
Yeah. What did you think about this last stretch for the Lakers?
So the only main positive I'll take, I mean, Kobe continued to play well. You know, Clarkson's up and down a little bit. Randall's up and down a little bit. D'Angelo was up and down a little bit. The only main thing I take from this recent stretch is the emergence of Larry Nance.
Lance Nance.
Lance Nance. He has heard our prayers and he's answered them. You know,
he has just solved the mystery.
He solved the mystery of Byron's offense, and he just goes in there and, man, this guy is like solid. You know, we've been talking for a long time about, and again, this is a guy on like the second worst team in the NBA putting up numbers. So you take everything with a grain of salt. Like,
right.
He's taking wide open mid-range jumpers. Still, though, he's executing. He's doing his job. He's not doing too much. He's not like completely, you know, for a while out, his problem out there was he would just become a complete ghost. But he had a really good game against Memphis, and he just looks like a completely different player. It's been slowly building up, you know, in each game he was taking like 3-4 shots. And then he went in against Memphis and shot 8-for-12, scored 17 points and 11 rebounds and 2 steals. Like, that's an amazing line in 25 minutes. Followed that up in the next game against Charlotte with 12-7. And he shot 6-for-7 from the field in that game. So, you know, he's really solid. I know he's older than Randall, but I guess I just didn't expect Nance was going to do anything this year, let alone look better than Julius Randle. You know, like, yeah. I'm not going to jump on this bandwagon of like, oh, Randall's done, because I think that he's so raw and so young still. Like, maybe he won't be like an alpha superstar type player, but I think he can be very good,
sure.
Like very solid at least. And he's such a good rebounder that if he can at least, you know, throw together some other decent offensive skills, he'll be fine. But that's besides the point. Anyway.
And we could trade him and then.
Exactly. there's a lot of options there. So,
right.
Larry Nance, that's the big thing I take away. Super solid. And almost to the point, I mean, like, again, this is probably blasphemous to say this early, but if we end up, I mean, God knows what's, this is so early, so we're just spitballing here, but like, let's say we end up getting like Ben Simmons in the draft or something, and then we sign Kevin Durant, and then it's like, what does that leave? Where does that leave Julius Randle? You could like theoretically package Julius Randle with like some other young prospect or something for an established veteran and start Larry Nance at the power forward. And I would be fairly comfortable with that because he's so solid, and he's, you know, he just does his job. If he's wide open, he can hit the mid range shot. He's a good defender positionally and he gets rebounds. So I just really like, he seems like a good locker room and chemistry guy. I really have enjoyed watching Larry Nance develop.
I definitely agree with you on that. And I think even his positional versatility provides no problems for us. And the fact that he can play such solid defense is, I mean, especially when you're talking about, this is a hypothetical, but if you're getting guys like Kevin Durant or getting offensive weapons to come in to already add to Jordan Clarkson, D'Angelo Russell, you almost don't need another guy like Randall, if you know what I'm saying,
exactly.
To be that offensive weapon where you need just a solid guy like Larry Nance, where, look, he's not going to average like even 15 points a game, but that's not really what you need. You just need a guy to clean up, play some solid defense, you know, be a great pick and roll partner, which is, dude, Larry Nance is like the best roller on this freaking team, and we just don't utilize him enough. Like, Kobe's found out, oh, I should pass the, you know, Larry Nance on the pick and rolls, and he'll just get me dunks. You know, it's just sad that Larry Nance doesn't get these opportunities as much with D'Angelo Russell, but that's, you know, on the coach again. But yeah, I just really like what I've seen from Larry Nance and just how smart he is and knowing when to cut, when to roll, how to play defense. Just the fact that he's worked so hard on his jump shot and it actually legitimately shows. I mean, it legitimately shows. He was 6-for-7 the last game, and like 3 or 4 of those were wide open jump shots that he drained.
Just drained him, yeah.
It's just great to see like it come together for this guy, especially a guy who was so underhyped. But let's quickly talk more about the Julius Randle, like Larry Nance thing, because, and I guess this can segue into what we've thought about Julius Randle the last few games as well. Yeah, I don't know about Julius Randle. I'm not going to like super doubt him as well, but I question now what his ceiling is, if you know what I'm saying. I question like how amazing he can be, because at a certain point, and this is still, you know, we have to keep in mind that it's still his rookie season, but, it's just discouraging to see this guy continually just put up like below 40% shooting nights as a power forward in this league. It's great that he still rebounds well, and it's great that he can, you know, is active, but kind of like I referenced before, there are a lot of guys in this league who are good rebounders and good offensive rebounders, but their value doesn't go past that. And not to say that these next few guys that I'm about to name like are similar to the Julius Randle at all, but in terms of like their value to a team, it might be that way. So guys like David Lee, Jared Sullinger, Kenneth Faried. So I don't know if you remember Kenneth Faried, but like he had so much hype coming out and people thought that he was like, you know, the manimal, he's going to be a beast. And then all of a sudden, 2-3 years into this, they realize, like, even Denver realizes that we don't really have a use for this guy as active as he is. He like rebounds a lot, kind of scores, but he's going to top out at a double-double guy, but does his value really extend past that?
Right.
And Julius Randle right now is not showing me, and I thought what was going to separate him out of all these guys, and I'm not like giving up on this aspect of his game because it seems like he's trying to piece single parts here together, but I thought what was going to set him apart was his playmaking ability, which has just totally gone to shit, I think, recently, where he's just focused on his own shot or doing his own stuff.
Yep.
But, yeah, so I guess what are your thoughts on, like, that, you know, Julius Randle not falling into the trap of being some of these other guys? Because I think some of the signs were there in college where he wasn't an active defender. Not that you have to get big steals or blocks numbers, but
no,
it's
know,
also
I
just
I
not there. Yeah, so your thoughts?
Okay, so at Christmas, I was watching some games, the games with one of my uncles, who's a longtime basketball fan, and we were talking about the Lakers and the young development of the young players, and, you know, he mentioned he likes D'Angelo, he likes Lance, I called him Lance, he likes Lance. He thinks Clarkson's pretty good. And he said the big question, he even likes Hibbert. I know he's not part of our our reboot, but he enjoys Hibbert. His biggest question mark was Randle. And I said, you know, I know Randle's been struggling, but I'm not that down on him yet. It's early. He's 20 years old. A lot can change. And he just told me, and I mean, it was a good point. It's so simple, but like, I hadn't really thought about it. And he was just like, okay, well, tell me what Julius Randle does really well. And he's got to do, if he's going to be a good player, not even like an all-star, but just a good player, he's got to do one thing really well. And I was like, the only thing I could think of was rebound.
Yeah.
And he sort of did the same thing you just did. He went through all these guys who were amazing rebounders and couldn't do anything else. And the problem with Randle, I don't know. I don't want to say he's regressed from last year because he didn't really play, but I'm even thinking about like last year in the summer league and last year in the preseason. And the only reason I would use the word regress is because he seemingly has become more of a black hole. And I don't know if this is a function. I mean, here we go with, you can tank and tank and tank for the rest of your life, but the unintended consequences are you're going to get yourself into situations where you have these young, developing, and very impressionable players on your team who think that now that because the games mean nothing, it's a forum for them to go out there and just try to, you know, practice random things that they have, you know, things that they've been working on in practice. Let me go into a professional setting in a real live NBA game and do those things, which is so ridiculous. I can't even begin to, you know, like that's not the appropriate forum to do that. So now we have like this Julius Randle who looks worse than Larry Nance objectively. And although he seemingly has so much talent, he's like this 6'9", like he's a bull, like he'll run everybody over. He can outsprint like many power forwards in the NBA with the ball. He seemingly has decent playmaking ability and decent handles and good effort on the defensive end, but he is so like, I don't know if dumb is the right word, but like his basketball
doesn't have the mental awareness.
His mental awareness on offense leaves so much to be desired. You know what I mean? Like have you played basketball at all? Is what I wonder when I see him. Like he'll make spin moves right into his defender. You know what I mean?
Double teams or something like that.
Like a guy will be completely leaning on his, let's say like his left side, and he's standing on the right side of the block. Just try to picture this. Okay, guy's leaning back on his left side, giving him the baseline to spin completely. But everybody knows like Randle is one dimensional, and like he absolutely like can only turn one way, and he's like a crazy ox, and he can't control himself, and he spazzes out all the time, and heel spin directly into the way that the guy is leaning because that's the way he's comfortable going. And it's just like ill-advised plays like that. Ill-advised plays like recently he's been hitting a few threes, which I like.
Yeah.
But, and honestly, his 3-point stroke looks better than his like long 2 stroke for some reason. And I don't know if you've noticed that, like his 3-point stroke, it doesn't really have as much of a hitch. He just
I think it's because his like knuckleball shot is like, it's going to be hard either way. So like, I guess the distance allows it to like kind of soften up. Yeah, exactly. I don't know.
I don't know, but I feel like it looks better for some. I mean, I haven't examined it that closely, but it feels like when he shoots threes, it looks like it has a better chance. When he shoots a 2, I'm like, it's definitely not going in.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, I mean, he
looks the less seasoned than anybody on that team, and it's just...
But, like, by far, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no.
D'Angelo is 19, and this is his first year in the NBA, and he's a point guard, for God's sake, and I feel much more comfortable with him out there than I do with Randall. You know, Randall, like, so where I was going with that 3-pointer thing, he'll hit a 3, and then he'll take, like, 4 ill-advised drives into the lane because he got all this confidence now. Like, if you're going to take those crazy drives... You better make like 90% of the layups you're attempting because he gets in there and has some gimmies. And it's like when he goes up there, you're almost expecting him to miss and you're just hoping that he can jump back up quickly and tip his own miss in.
Yeah.
And that's what's killing his percentage. Like, I swear to God, I know he's shooting I saw some stat about how he's shooting a horrible percentage outside of the paint, but I think he's shooting a really bad percentage inside of the paint as well. You know, because a lot of his shots he takes are right at the rim and they just brick. Like, it's, you know, Stu makes comments about how he puts way too much spin on the ball. At some level, it goes beyond that. Like, he has no touch. And that's another area where I feel like he's regressed, because when you watched him when we both of us watched him in Summer League last year, it seemed like he would drive into the paint and take these ill-advised shots, but he had such a soft touch finishing around the rim, they would all go in.
Yeah.
And now he drives in and he does these same things that I don't have the tape, but I vividly remember him doing this. Driving into the lane, the same types of moves he does now, and he'd be able to soft finish it up, and he just can't do it anymore. So I'm concerned in that sense, and they talk about working on his shot. It's going to take a severe overhaul to make him like a legitimate NBA player at this point.
I mean, at this point, I don't even think they should, like, you know, the working on the shot is something they definitely have to do, but they have to work on so many other parts of his game, including, like you said, his mental awareness, where just play like legitimate, good, sound, fundamental basketball.
Look at Larry Nance, for God's sake. He doesn't do these fancy, like, high dribbles and shoulder shots.
Julius Randle reminds me of, like, a power forward version of a washed-up Kobe Bryant. It's like, what are you doing out there? It's like, there are other people around you that are trying to, like, you know, play with you, and the fact that this guy doesn't even play a pick-and-roll properly, and that when you give him the ball on the roll, he does a Kobe jab step and faces up, it's like, can you just roll or, like, you know, do what Larry Nance does? Just go straight into a dunk. Like, why do you have to do all these extra, like, add these extra histrionics to what you're doing just so people know you can go one-on-one, which clearly you can't anymore like you did in high school. Like, I get that you averaged, like, 32 points in high school and were able to play this, like, bully ball, but that's clearly, clearly not going to work. And in this day and age in the NBA, you have to know how to do all these nuanced things like cut, roll, exactly, play defense, you know, pass the ball around, you know.
And God's sake, improve your hands. You know what I mean? I mean, that's like a hard thing to improve. But okay, Julius Randle, I swear to God, has got to be like the worst for somebody his size and strength and aggressiveness, has got to be like the worst roller to the basket I've ever seen. Anytime he sets a pick, he always pops. And sometimes he's got like a wide open lane to the point where we've had many plays where it'll be a pick and roll, and the point guard or Kobe or whoever will throw a bounce pass, a perfect pocket pass anticipating a roll into wide open space, and then the ball just rolls. Like, the ball just bounces because no one's there, and it results in a turnover because Randle didn't roll like an idiot. You know, so, and why would you pop when your least effective move by far is your jump shot? You know, you should roll every damn time. Put some pressure on the defense, for God's sake.
Yeah.
You know, but he just likes to catch it and hold it like ISO and go into like his little Kobe, like, I think I'm a 6'9". Kobe was my favorite player when I was growing up. Everyone said I was like Kobe, not Shaq, you know, and like do his little shoulder shimmy, and which doesn't work, and he'll throw up a horrible brick two inches away from the basket. It's just like, what does he do? My uncle was right. Like, what does he do right? He doesn't pop. He doesn't roll. Like, what the hell? What does he do?
Yeah. I think one last thing to wrap this thing on Julius Randle up is, you know, for a guy his size, he has good handles, but I think he thinks he's LeBron James.
He does,
like,
yeah,
with his handles, and he is not. Yes. Like, your handles aren't that good, man. Like, in transition, you're pretty good for a 6'9", 6'10 guy, but you're not Lamar Odom here.
Yeah.
So stop trying to do it in traffic, please. Like, for God's sakes. Like,
yeah, I mean,
stop.
Like, look at the other big forwards who are able to get a lot of assists and are known for being decent ball handlers. Have you watched Blake Griffin dribble? That fool keeps the ball so low. Like, and he just does fundamental things. Like, sometimes he'll go between his legs, but he bounces the ball about like 6 inches off the ground because he knows he's a big man and he's going to get stripped every single time. He's not dumb. And it just feels like, I don't know what the hell Julius is doing, but it's just like, I mean, I mentioned it before. It's like years of bad habits developed because some AAU bastard coach was telling him, hey man, you're the best. You could dribble like Kobe Bryant. You got the power like Shaq. You could do it all.
The power like Shaq. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's you're right. It's more, the jump shot's going to help a lot if he can get one, but there's so many other things that he needs to fix. He also needs to just understand, like, for God's sake, Tristan Thompson just got like a 5-year, $90 million deal for pretty much exclusively being a decent low post player and a good rebounder. But imagine if Tristan Thompson was taking 15 shots a game, shooting 40%, he probably would not have gotten that deal. You know what I mean? So, like, know your limitations and just do that. You know, you can average a double-double without taking as many shots. I think, like, the last game was a good example of what Julius should do. He only took, like, 8 shots, and some of those were in transition. Even some of those were ill-advised, but he at least shot 50% and, you know your role, for God's sake.
Yeah. To wrap this up quickly, I had a random like trade idea in my head. I don't know what you'll think about this, but you know, I think we'll eventually, you know, if the time and place comes where we keep our draft pick, you know, trading Julius will probably be a good idea. But I honestly am not sure what you can get for Julius right now. Yeah, but I came up with this weird. Lakers fans probably aren't going to like this deal because I guess it's somewhat lowballing, but I think it works in like a lot of different levels and gives us a little bit more flexibility. But what do you think about a trade with the Chicago Bulls where we give up Randall, Hibbert, and Lou Will, maybe throw in another salary guy we want to get rid of, like Nick Young, for Joakim Noah, a guy that we'd probably want to extend over Roy Hibbert anyways, and a guy that you like. Joakim Noah, Taj Gibson, who we've talked about before, Doug McDermott, okay, and the Bulls' first round pick this year.
Yeah, I mean, I like that trade.
It makes you think, right? I wouldn't say I would do it.
Yeah,
but
I definitely wouldn't like, 100% pull the trigger. To be honest, I'm not even sure the Bulls would do that. But
oh no, yeah, just in a hypothetical sense where this makes sense for everybody.
Right. I do like that trade for a couple of reasons. One, and the main reason being that I just see Taj Gibson filling such a nice role for us. He could play backup center theoretically. He could be a starting power forward. Like, he could do so many things. Joakim Noah, I like him. I'm a little bit concerned that Tom Thibodeau ran him into the ground so much that his career is now over.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% convinced. But it's still a risk. That being said, I mean, the main asset we're giving up is Randall, and in exchange, we get McBuckets.
McBuckets! McDougie with D!
McBuckets is solid, man. Let me tell you, like, I watched this guy on Christmas.
Yeah.
He didn't play that well in that game, but he's just smart. Even the shots he misses, you're like, wow, that was a good shot. Like, he knows where to position himself already. He's a coach's son, and he plays like a coach's son. And we desperately need floor spacers and small forwards, and McBuckets would fit perfectly in that role. I don't think his defense is atrocious.
Yeah.
And, yeah, McBuckets, I like him.
I mean, for anybody to think that this is such a crazy idea, I think the Lakers actually worked out McBuckets and legitimately thought about like taking him with the number
taking
seven
him instead of
pick.
Randall. Yeah.
Yeah, even though all of us were like, "Oh my God, what are we thinking?" You know, but like going back to your uncle's question, at least you know McBuckets can shoot. You know, he can do one thing at an elite level.
Oh,
at
very elite level, know? Yeah.
And he can also cut and do a lot of other things. You know, I think obviously if you're looking at the two players side by side, like Randall obviously has the higher ceiling.
He has a higher upside, but, yeah.
But McBuckets might have the higher floor, you know. At worst, you might be getting Kyle Korver here who can, like, rebound better and, like, do a little more offensively.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, exactly. And I think he's as McBuckets starts to develop more in the NBA, you're going to see his post game
out,
which he was, like, a huge post player in college, so... He's really exactly. good at sealing. He's really good at doing back cuts. It's like if we ever got any semblance of a system offense, McBuckets would be amazing in it, you know? We just threw out Jeff Hornacek and Luke Walton. Those are both guys who run, like, sort of up-tempo, like, quick reactionary systems. I mean, Luke Walton, I shouldn't say that's what he runs. I guess Steve Kerr runs it, and he's just there. But McBuckets would fit, like, amazingly in either of those systems. Even in the Princeton, he would fit really well, but... Hopefully we don't run that for longer than this year.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's just a fun hypothetical thing to throw out there and kind of just sadly shows where we're at in terms of how we view Randall and, like, what we can
sad.
Probably
how,
get for my
how much have things changed, man? I'm going to go back and listen to, like, our first podcast after this. We talk about how Randall's going to be, like, the future superstar of the NBA.
Yeah, it is sad. But, I mean, if you look at things objectively and looking at things, like, looking into the future, especially if we keep our pick and get someone like Ben Simmons or even Brandon Ingram. Dougie McBuckets fits way better.
It's way better. And we're just trying to be fair. This is the Laker podcast, but like we don't need to be blind homers for no reason. If Randall sucks, it's our job to say this fool sucks. Like, you know, I'm not going to say still, because I'm a Laker fan, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. I'm not going to say we totally botched the pick, but it's not seeming like... They did a very, you know, it's not seeming like Randall is for sure going to be even a starter in the NBA the way he's been playing lately.
Yeah. And quick aside, I mean, how overrated is this 2014
Holy
draft?
Holy crap, like the most overrated draft in NBA history by far. Not to say that, like, those guys all suck. Like, I think a lot of them are going to be fine.
They're okay, solid players.
They're solid players.
I mean,
everyone was saying 2014 was supposed to be like the best draft since LeBron, and it turns out that 2015 was actually like a way better draft. Like all these guys, Devin Booker was like taken what, number 12 or something.
Yeah,
that fool's going to be really good, you know. So the entire lottery of the 2014 draft, even like Lance Nance was taken 27. He's really solid.
Yeah,
not like an all-star. He's solid. But...
Wiggins is the best player from the 2014 draft, and he's not really even the best player on his team right now. He's a solid player, but he's not LeBron James or like T-Mac or something like that, you know. And there's no one
not even
close to him at second. Like it's just a mishmash of like, okay, maybe they're gonna be good, maybe they could be all-star players. So there you go.
Yeah.
With that said, let's close up our Lakers talk and just quickly talk some D'Angelo and Clarkson, because that's all we really care about, really. Clarkson, I'm not going to say any more besides it seems like he's just getting back on his feet again. He hasn't had a very good games recently, but I think he said he's working on two bum wheels, so I guess his ankles aren't working that well.
Yeah.
Not too concerned about Clarkson. It's fine. Any thoughts on Clarkson?
Same. I mean, yeah, same. You're right. If he's playing with injuries, it's just hard to be like, oh, you shot 2 for 14.
Too critical.
Yeah. But he's still overall, despite his recent struggles, doing better than he did last year. So, I like Clarkson.
He didn't have bum ankles on that like one dunk against the Hornets the other night. But...
That's right.
D'Angelo, he's had okay to bad games. He had a really good game on Christmas against the Clippers where he was just on fire this game, and I was really encouraged by what I saw, not only on the offensive end, but he played some solid defense on Chris Paul as well and was really battling in there with Chris Paul and kind of annoying him with his length, which I liked.
Yep.
OKC actually had a pretty good game as well, even though we lost by like 35 points.
I'm not sure
how much, 100. How much to take away from that? The last few games, nah. I think you'll see from D'Angelo time and again that I guess my one concern, or not, it's not a concern, it's just kind of an annoyance thing that I'm sure some people are annoyed with D'Angelo as well, where you're not sure sometimes whether he's like taking his time and place with everything because he's methodically going through things, or whether he's just goddamn bored with everything that's going on right now, but he just doesn't want to do anything, you know what I mean? I mean, that's the only, like, issue that I have with D'Angelo, where sometimes he's so invisible because he looks bored out there and he plays like he's bored out there that you're like, well, I've seen him be aggressive, so why doesn't he just do that all the time, you know? And there are obviously a bunch of contextual limitations that we've already talked about in all of our previous 21 podcasts, but there are just times where you're like, are you awake? Can you, like, wake up? But, yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say about D'Angelo. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'll pretty much say the same thing. And his inconsistencies, I'm not going to get on his case yet because, okay, as ridiculous as this system that we're playing in is, and taking into account all the other factors, taking into the account that he has, like, no superstar teammates, really, because Kobe's, like, 40, he's not playing that bad. He's actually playing much worse than I thought. Much better than I expected him to play. I was looking at Kristaps Porzingis' stats, and Kristaps was getting like a lot of hype, which he deserved because nobody expected him to do anything this year. Mm-mm. And if you look at Kristaps' stats, he's shooting 42%, and he's averaging 13 points a game. And I think D'Angelo is averaging 12 points a game and shooting like 40%. So he's not that far off despite all the things going against him. Like, rookies are going to be rookies. Like, Kristaps put up some insane games this year, and then he followed them up with, you know, games where he played 20 minutes and scored 0 points, or, you know, played the entire game and scored 9 points, or, you know, something like that. So you're just going to get this, I think, with rookies, with this, like, wide-scale inconsistency. And I think that's just a function of these guys don't really understand that when you're in the NBA, you can't just get by on your raw talent anymore. They don't understand it yet. I mean, they're probably starting to understand it, but they don't fully understand that, like, if you don't absolutely dedicate your life and play your best on every single given night, you're not going to – somebody out there is going to go out there and dominate you. It doesn't matter if you're the number 2 pick or the number 53 pick. You know what I mean? You go out there and you're the number 2 pick of the 2015 draft, and you just don't play at 110%. The number 35 pick from the 2009 draft is going to work your ass all up and down the court, you know, for the entire game. So that's what I think these guys don't totally understand. D'Angelo had like a stretch of like 3 or 4 games where he was playing like at 4 times the speed that he's been playing at lately. He sort of reverted to where he was like earlier.
Yeah.
And again, it's not fun to play the Princeton. It's probably about as fun to play in the Princeton offense as it is to watch the Princeton offense. You know, the Lakers, for all the talk people say about like the defense and this and that, we're the worst points per game team and like the worst field goal percentage team. We're like in the bottom 2 in both categories in the entire NBA.
We're also the worst at like motioning, like on the pick and rolls. I saw that we're the worst at cuts, like exactly, in a motion offense. Prince is a motion offense, but there's like no motion going on besides the ball handler and like the guy setting the screen. So it's ridiculous.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, so 29th in offensive efficiency. We're just like bottom of the NBA in all these categories offensively. And for an offensive player like D'Angelo, that, you know, it's not really doing him any favors. So I like D'Angelo still. I still think he's shown so many signs, despite this crappy season. He's shown a lot of signs of what he could do. And I'm not that worried about him.
I'm not worried either. It just sucks when you're like, when all the, like you said, all the games are kind of melding into one, and you're just looking for, did D'Angelo have a good game? Oh, he didn't. Okay, well, I don't remember what game
exactly
we just watched. Or, you know, it's just like,
oh, he played 21 minutes and took 5 shots. Great.
Okay, well, skip over that game and forget it forever. You know, it's just, it is what it is at this point. And hopefully they kind of get their second wind in the new year, and we can kind of get this thing rolling again. And hopefully the full young blood train will be on, like, rolling to end this season. But
which I'm sure.
Not concerned with D'Angelo at all. With that said, that kind of wraps up our take on the Lakers. I mean, they lost all their games. There's no analysis that needs to be said besides that. Byron is still Byron. I liked his one quote where he credited Marcelo Huertas for the comeback against the Clippers, and I was just like, Jesus. are you kidding me? Like, D'Angelo and Randall were out there too, and they were the ones doing the most dynamic stuff out there. But you're going to credit Marcelo Huertas. All right, that's great. I mean, that's Byron. I mean, we don't need to go into any further details on Byron, but that's where we've been going. With that said, let's get to, I guess, what we wanted to touch upon today, really, on our podcast coming up next, where we'll talk about Brandon Ingram, Ben Simmons, and some NCAA talk.
Blood boils when you speak, yeah. Makes me weak, but I refuse to weep. Yet when I sleep, I feel tears trickling down my cheek.
Okay, so let's talk some NCAA stuff and some. I think you and I have both gotten a closer look at Brandon Ingram, who I touched upon in a previous podcast, but we both didn't really, we hadn't seen enough up until this point. Yeah, so let's talk about Brandon Ingram, Ben Simmons, the Scal Labissiere, Jacob Portal. Portal. I don't even know how to say his name. Portal.
I think it's just Portal.
Portal. Yeah.
It just spelled weird.
Play like a turtle for Jacob Portal. Yeah. I think he's like German or something. I'm not sure. He's European, but he plays for Utah.
I just
Utah.
Call him Jacob Portal.
Jacob Portal. He'll, yeah, just go into a portal and you'll win a championship. Yeah, if you draft him. But yeah, I think you and I both watched live for the first time Brandon Ingram against Portal in Utah, where they lost in an overtime game. But you know, more and more, I've just become more and more impressed and sure about Brandon Ingram. And it's shaping up to be like, not in terms of how the players play, but it's kind of like a Towns Okafor thing, where Okafor was like 100% the front runner from beginning to end. And Towns all of a sudden came up just because people saw, like, with the eye test, they could see Towns kind of can do a lot more and can fit more people's needs. And I can see that in Ingram as well. But let me just give a quick update on what Brandon Ingram's been doing the last, you know, 3-4 games. So, I mean, the last game he had, which was yesterday, he had 26 points, 11 rebounds on 11 for 16 shooting, 3 for 6 from 3. Game before that against Utah, he had a subpar game, 15 points, 5 rebounds, 3 blocks, 3 steals. Game before that, 26 points, 14 rebounds on 9 for 13 shooting, 2 for 4 from 3. And, you know, something that we both realized while watching the actual Duke game is just what a crappy offense they run, and what, you know, I wasn't sure what their point guards or guards were doing the entire time. I was like, you should probably give it to the 6'10 guy who can handle the ball and like
shoot
score
over everybody.
So shoot threes. Yeah, I was like, why are these point guards trying to tear Brown everything and drive and get blocked every? They're literally
Tier
like,
Brown. Nice.
Tier Brown. You like that Lakers reference? Yeah, yeah. Tier Brown, the guy who could like cross over and get to the lane, and then all of a sudden at
just
the last
leave it
second,
on the front of the rim every time.
Leave him wide, like, yeah, miss a wide open layup. But that's what was happening. But so I give a lot of credit to Brandon Ingram for even putting up these some of these monstrous numbers after watching how Duke plays and how little they go to him on offense. But I guess what have you seen from Brandon Ingram? Because for me, you know, he doesn't have as amazing handles as a Kevin Durant or anything like that, but he has good enough handles at 6'10 to really put a defense on skates, essentially, because he can drive it in the lane. He has this crazy, like, quick spin move that he likes to use a lot, and he can just, like, as skinny a frame as he has, he can really finish through contact. Like, he's deceptively strong, if you know what I mean. It's almost like a Kevin Durant thing,
yeah,
where people made so much of an issue about how this guy couldn't bench 180 or something, but
right,
he had like a strong core in his body where it didn't even matter, because Brandon Ingram defensively, I don't think he's a good positional defender yet, but I don't think a lot of young guys are good positionally. You know, they can play man-on-man defense pretty well. And, you know, positionally and, like, team defense is something they all have to work on. But Brandon Ingram, even when guarding the post, he has such a strong base and strong core that people can't post up on him as easily as you'd think with a frame like that. So I'm just encouraged by his intangibles in terms of his long wingspan, his length, his ability to shoot the three lights out, his ability to put the ball on the floor, finish through contact. I mean, he can do everything. Right now, I guess you can question his whether he's a good playmaker. He's only averaging 1.3 assists, but given how talented he is offensively as a scorer, I'm sure he can average three assists in the NBA. But it's the defensive potential and everything else that really kind of, you know, makes my eyes kind of widen. So what are your thoughts on Brandon Ingram?
I like Ingram. I'm not convinced that I take him over Towns, and let's start with the number one thing that
Simmons.
I'm not convinced I would take him over Simmons, and the number one thing that I'm always gonna be cautious about is this proved to not be true last year, but there's always every year gonna be this thing where there's clearly going into the season a front runner, And over the course of the season, the college season I'm talking about, everybody overanalyzes and it gets into way too much detail with these like front runners and like over dissects their game to the point where some guy who people thought was going to be okay, but shows flashes that he's quite good, gets pushed down, you know? So that happened last year with Okafor, but it was warranted. It's happened in years past, maybe not at like the 1 and 2, but just in terms of like guys like will shoot up suddenly into the lottery, into like the high top five who didn't deserve to be there because other guys got overanalyzed and pushed down. And then later you're like, how did this guy slip to number 8, you know, or whatever. So anyway, let's go over what I do like about Ingram. He's a really good shooter, which is obviously a transferable skill. He's 6'10", about, I think he's 6'9 and a half officially, and he's got a 7'3 wingspan. So sort of like Kevin Durant, he's going to be able to shoot over guys. If you look at Kevin Durant's stats from college, Durant was just obviously on a different level because he was shooting like 40% from three and he averaged 26 points a game. He was also taking like 19 shots a game. Yeah. In college, he got a lot more rebounds, which Ingram doesn't really do as much of as much rebounding as Durant did. But if you look at their blocks, like Durant averaged 2 blocks and 2 steals. Ingram's about 1.5 blocks, 1.5 steals. I guess I like – okay, so you talked about how you like that he has enough shake and enough slight handle in his game to be able to get a shot off. And I guess my counter to that would be – if you're going to be a 6'9 small forward whose primary role is to score, if you're going to be a superstar in the NBA, I know you're 6'9 and you've got a 7'3 wingspan and you're taller. To be like Kevin Durant level elite, not to say that he even needs to be up like as good as right. Kevin Durant, but just to be like in that elite level category, it's going to take more than just like a slight ability to get around defenders. Like, Kevin Durant is an elite ball handler for any size,
sure.
You know?
Sure, and he showed it. He showed it against Julius Randle.
Oh,
on
my
that one
God. Play. he works everybody, you know? And he worked Kobe a ton of times, too. So that's why Kevin Durant is who he is. And I guess my main concern with Ingram would be, okay, so you have this really lanky, really gifted offensive player, but when his shot isn't going, because I'm not convinced he can get his shot off as easily as Durant gets his off, what else does he bring to the table? The thing that I like about Simmons, to sort of switch gears to him, is, or I guess to just draw a comparison because these two guys are going to be compared to each other against each other all season. The thing I like about Simmons is if he's not scoring for you, he can do so many other things. He's averaging like double-digit rebounds this year. He's averaging 6 assists per game this year on a team who has no one. Like, he's averaging over 2 steals a game and over a block a game. And I know he can't shoot as of now, but he does so many other things right now. Not to say Ingram can't get there, but I just think that Simmons is so so much more of a sure thing. I tend to agree with you that Ingram has much more of like a plug and play ability than Simmons. Simmons needs to be put in like a particular situation. Ingram, you can throw on any team and literally any team 1 through 30 in the NBA, and he's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Because he can shoot. Simmons, it would have to be like an ideal situation. Say, for example, Simmons gets drafted by the Lakers. Okay, where do you play him? Do you play him at the 3? No, because although I think he can defend NBA 3s and he's so athletic, he can't shoot like at all. And yeah, it's partially confidence and partially his shot just isn't good. And you can't start him next to Randle. So, okay, then you play him at the 4 and then you have to trade Randle, creates all these problems. And even if he's at the 4, like, then you have this point forward who's like not quite as fast as like a LeBron. And he's going to get you assists, but then like, is he going to be the elite scorer that you need when you're taking a guy number 1 overall? Like, when you're taking a guy number 1 overall, that guy's got to be like the best at everything, you know?
Right.
And is Simmons ever going to be like a 20, 25 point scorer in the NBA? I mean, the way he plays offense now, I just, you know, I can't see it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's going to be a back and forth thing all year. Right? I mean, so I guess that's an advantage. Ingram seems like he has more plug and play ability than Simmons, and that's what I like about him.
Yeah, I'm looking at Ben Simmons' numbers, and they're just absolutely bonkers. You know, 19 points, 13 rebounds, almost 6 assists, 1.4 blocks, 2.3 steals. And those are bonkers numbers, don't get me wrong. They're like, amazing.
Yeah.
But I think too often, and even with the Durant comp for Ingram, I don't want to get too caught up in these comps, but I think from a lot of people that I've talked to, they just automatically think LeBron James when we talk about Ben, when they hear Ben Simmons' name without actually having seen him play.
Right.
And it's just, he's not LeBron James. He's more like Blake Griffin with like some LeBron James.
Exactly.
In him, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
So if you're looking for like a LeBron James savior, that's not who Ben Simmons is. He's probably like a Blake Griffin who can defend a whole lot better and has a lot more defensive potential. And, you know, Brandon Ingram, maybe he's more like a better shooting Giannis Antetokounmpo, you know, maybe not Durant, but he has the same measurables as Giannis, and he can shoot better, and you can see it on that level. Maybe he doesn't have everything put together as of now, but, you know, looking at the Lakers and who they're probably going to go after in free agency and whatnot, I think I like Ingram just because this goes against everything I said about, you know, we can trade Randall because we don't really need another scorer, but I think the Lakers, even in this stage with D'Angelo and Clarkson, are still looking for that main superstar, if you know what I mean, like, they need a replacement for Kobe, someone who's like a legit pure scorer, someone like, I mean, they're probably going to go after Durant, but they need someone like that to take over, who's like a legit like scoring threat. I don't know if Ingram can be that, but if you compare him to Ben Simmons, I'd put my bets more on Ingram to be that sort of guy if he develops every facet of his game to be the actual scoring threat that we need next to D'Angelo, who can pass when he can still be a passer and everything like that, and Clarkson, who can just be the shooting guard cutting wing type. But I think the Lakers are still looking for that superstar scoring guy. And I think, I'm not saying he has it right now, but Brandon Ingram has shown flashes that he could be that sort of high upside guy. We're not sure yet if his handles are going to translate or, you know, and I also don't know because I don't know the offense that he plays in, if he's showcasing everything he can at the same time. And this is a guy who can still work on his body and everything like that. So that's the only reason why I guess I kind of side more with Ingram, even though I'd be happy with Simmons as well. It just creates an easier solve for the Lakers, for a team like the Lakers to draft Ingram.
It does. And I guess, again, for me, it all goes back to, he's 6'9". If you go back and watch Kevin Durant, and again, these are just comps, just because they're being generally thrown out there. Like, neither of us think that necessarily these are accurate. But if you go back and watch like Kevin Durant or really any elite scorer in college, in the last decade or whatever, those guys pretty much played in college how they do now. Like, their games are refined, but Kevin Durant was doing the same stuff. Like, he was coming down, crossing guys up and popping three-pointers in their faces, like driving to the rim and taking crazy like shots and hitting them off the dribble, like little runners while he's drifting. And he could do all that. Ingram, when I watch him, I just see a guy who's very solid, but I would be concerned that you put that guy in a team next to D'Angelo Russell, for example, and he's used to right now standing around and taking shots over guys who are so much smaller than him, because he's a 6'9 guard on Duke. Like, he's listed as a guard. He plays on the perimeter. You know, he only weighs 190 pounds. Like, he stands on the perimeter. A lot of college teams play zone, and he's largely shooting over guys who are like 6'1". And that's just not that hard for him to do. And in the NBA, you can't get away with being a spot up shooter. If you want to be elite, you're going to have to show me consistently that you can hit shots on the move, hit shots off the dribble, you know, run up, stop on a dime and shoot a three. Like, until he shows that he can do all of those things instead of just catch the ball, hold it, do a couple jabs, do a little like crossover and shoot a jump shot. Like, those are all basic moves that like are not going to translate. Again, if we're talking about who we're thinking about moving forward, the reason I like Ben Simmons is because if we're looking at Kevin Durant, which becomes more and more ridiculous to say as the days go on because of how bad we are, but if there's any crazy shot out there that we have at getting Durant, I would want Ben Simmons out there
to be a point forward who's going to be another guy that Durant can pass to and get the ball. Sure. Can pass to Durant. Like, he's not going to be selfish. He doesn't do the exact same thing Durant does, which Ingram sort of, you know, all he does is shoot. And that's why I'm sort of more leaning towards Simmons. But there's still so much college basketball left to be played. And we saw Towns just go berserk the second half of last year. So if Ingram does that and is all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait a minute, this guy's taking crazy shots, you know, like off the dribble and like taking guys one-on-one, breaking them down and just hitting jumpers. Like if he's doing stuff like that, then it's going to change things a lot, because then you really have to be like, okay, well, Simmons could theoretically be like an 18 point per game player in the NBA, which I don't know if that's a number one player. So.
Right. Like you said, I think there's a lot of time to be like, there's a lot of time to see and to see how these guys develop, you know, just the last five games to your point, Ingram's averaging 22.8 points, 8.8 boards, two steals, two blocks on 17 for 30, 57% from three.
Well,
so if he continues on that pace to end the season, I think I just bring up his name too, because even though I side with him, I think it's not going to be an easy number one like people said it would. I don't think, even with Simmons's amazing play and amazing stats, just because I saw like the highlights from his last game, his 26 and point 11 rebound game, and Ingram was doing some of the stuff you were talking about in terms of he's at the 3-point line, he crosses over some guy and then he crosses them over into a spin move into like a double clutch like fading layup, you know, that he can hit somehow it with contact. So that's the kind of stuff you want to see, I guess, when you're thinking about, well, is this guy just like a good scorer, or is he a superstar scorer? And I think those are things like some of the stuff that you brought up is set. When you're looking at those things, those are some of the things you want to look at to see if that separates them. You know what I mean? In terms of, can they do the pull up three? Can they do the shake and bake and actually hit a fadeaway jump shot instead of just like standard, oh, he hits a three there. Oh, he hit a three off a screen, or, you know, he hit a jump shot over a guy off a simple post up.
Exactly.
I think that's what you're talking about.
That's exactly what I was talking about. Yeah.
Exactly, and I think those are the same kind of benchmarks you want to see from Ingram as well, and some of the things that I've slowly started to see in the last game or two. So we'll see if that progresses. To wrap this up, I guess, I quickly wanted to point out just the invisible act that Scalabissieri's put on.
Oh,
I mean,
my
this
gosh,
guy
what the hell?
Is not, he's not even playing anymore. He's playing like 10 minutes. He's playing off the bench. I think something that I didn't realize was he's such a terrible rebounder. Even when he was playing, he was like averaging like Andrea Bargnani levels of rebounding in terms of this guy couldn't rebound. He was averaging like 4 or 5 rebounds. And right now it's down to like 3.6 rebounds on the year. He's 9.2 points per game, 3.6 rebounds. I still think he's a great, you know, blocker, but the rebounding percentage is really concerning to me. And the fact that he's not even getting any minutes right now, maybe he's just a super raw player. But it's just something to look at. Any thoughts on Scal?
Yeah, so Scal is weird because we remember like last year we saw some video that somebody posted. I can't remember where, but there was some video somebody posted from like a Nike Hoop Academy of like Scal and Thon Maker going one-on-one against each other. And like you could see Jesse Buss and like the Laker and Ryan West and Bill Burtka in the background watching. And Scal was like, everyone was like, oh my God, the top prospect. He was like, before the season started, I think he was ranked number one actually on like all the major sites.
Yeah.
And just from watching that, I know it's like a stupid like 5-minute clip of these guys literally taking turns backing each other down in the post, but he looks so clunky, and his highlight videos from college look so clunky. And the reason I was like withholding my criticism was because Carl Anthony Towns like randomly showed all this stuff like 10 games into the year last year. So I was like, I was waiting and just going to be like, okay, well, Scal, like I think in his second game of the season, he showed some signs against some podunk school, but.
Yeah, I think we called him a combo of Towns and Okafor. Can we burn that tape?
Yeah,
we should delete that episode.
Delete that episode. But I don't know. Like, you're right. He doesn't. The thing that Towns did, even when his offense wasn't there, was he rebounded and blocked shots like a madman.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And I was wrong. I'll be the first to admit it. Those things translated. Like, you said they were going to translate. I thought they absolutely were not going to translate. I thought he fouled way too much. And he wasn't going to be able to get the same types of shot blocks anymore, and he has been. So Scal, though, it's like he has not shown anything, like no signs of life. Very concerning. And I mean, I guess this is a draft where if you're going to have a pick, it might as well be in the top three.
Yep.
Because after the top three, it just dips so hard. Like, I don't even know who would even go three. I know Dragon Bender is getting like a lot of
mysterious Dragon Bender.
They're mysterious. Exactly. Like,
he has such an awesome name, though. It sounds like just like
an awesome name.
Like a, yeah, evil villain from overseas that's going to come and like save us or something. I don't know. It's an awesome name to have. I don't know how good he is, but right. He sounds like he should be amazing.
His gun is like not bad.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed, to be honest, to taking like Chris Dunn.
Oh yeah.
Hoping for Kevin Durant signing and then packaging Clarkson and Randall to get like a really good player.
Sure.
I would not be opposed to that. So
me neither.
I think top three in this draft, you're going to get a pretty to very good player. After that, I'm very skeptical about everyone. So I guess this is like, it always sucks to be like, oh no, like it's still very much a real possibility that the Lakers end up with the second best record, worst record, and then end up with the number four pick because of the lottery. And then that pick would go to Philadelphia. But it doesn't seem like it's going to like completely cripple the franchise. For example, like last year, the number four pick was Kristaps. That would have been a huge blow given how Kristaps has played, you know? So
yeah,
it might not end up being that big of a deal. It's fortunate. We're most likely, it seems like, going to keep our pick this year.
Yeah.
So
the only thing I'll say about Scal is like, at first I was like, oh, you know, if he's not a great rebounder, that's okay, because maybe that's the center you pit next to Randall, because Randall's the great defender. I mean, great rebounder. And Scal can be the great positional defender, much in the same way that Roy Hibbert has never been a great rebounder throughout his career. He just played really good positional defense, really solid defense, and blocked shots.
Right.
If Scal can do that, maybe it doesn't matter that he's only averaging, you know, well, it does matter that he's only averaging like four rebounds, but, you know, it might not be as much of a concern if he's next to a guy like Randall who rebounds like a beast, you know. But I just think he's so raw, and that his like body clearly is not translating even in the college level, which is why he's probably not even getting time right now, that it's really risky. I mean, I think if we had the number three pick, maybe I'd still go with Scal if we're left with that point, but I probably lean towards a guy like Chris Dunn, who you're for sure are at least going to get a pretty athletic like point guard that you can see where he goes from there. But Scal is kind of risky to me. That other guy, Jacob Poeltl, I don't really want anything.
No, that guy's not that good. Yeah,
he's like solid for college, but I guess he tops out for me as like a Jonas Valanciunas in the NBA. Okay. Yeah, Alex Len, that type of guy. He doesn't really have, like, he's not like a Kristaps Porzingis where he can shoot threes and, like, he's a crazy shot blocker.
He just rolls
to the basket really well. He has good touch in the post, but that's pretty much it for Poeltl.
So. Yeah, I mean, he's only listed that high because he's so big and strong.
And the center crop in the NCAA this year sucks, so.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much it. With that said, any last thoughts on all the prospects we've talked about today?
No, the only other thing I'll say is there's a guy currently ranked on draftexpress.com, ranked number 10, named Cheek Diallo from Kansas.
Cheek Diallo.
And he just sounds like a number 55 overall pick that the Lakers had during their championship years. Doesn't he sound some random guy we drafted from Congo who like never came to the NBA and now he reincarnated as Cheek Diallo?
Yeah, just like a Chwidiary Mutabumbum.
Exactly.
Or Adder Majok. Yeah.
Adder Majok. Yeah.
Cheok Diallo could just as easily be any one of those guys. We would never know if he came to our actual practice facility. We're like, is that Cheok Diallo or is that Chwidiary Mutabumbum?
And he's from Mali and he is 6'9 with a 7'4 wingspan. It's like like all those other guys. I don't know what those other guys just have crazy long wingspans for some reason.
And for all we know, this guy's probably like 36 years old. We just don't know. He just still has the same measurables. You're right. We should draft that guy with a second round pick.
Yeah.
With that said, you know, that's our episode. We'll continue to update you on our thoughts with the NCAA process as we continue to get through the year and continue to lose more and our chances get higher and higher that we keep our pick.
Yay.
So we'll see. We'll see where that goes. With that said, that's our episode. Please catch us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. Please go to iTunes and rate and review us. The more you rate and review us, Tommy, fill in the blank.
More ping pong balls for Ben Simmons or Ingram.
More ping pong balls for Ben Simmons and Brandon Ingram. There you go. So with that said, catch us on the next episode. Hope you liked that extra long episode today. I am out and going to eat dinner. I'm going to LA Zoo Nights. Have you been to LA Zoo Nights?
I have no idea what that is.
LA Zoo. So the LA Zoo, they put on this thing during like Christmas and New Year's where they, it's a light show pretty much. And you, I guess some of the animals, no, not the animals aren't lit
they
up.
Dance.
I
don't know what I'm talking
about. It's like Madagascar Live. No, it's just like, I don't know. It's like a light show.
All right, man, enjoy.
I'll catch you later.
All right. See ya.
Now you got to do your bye thing, dude.
Oh, bye.
And pulling and wishing that Messiah would be coming somewhere to deliver us. I am
there is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to Geico than saving you money, Geico also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the Geico app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.